My name is Christophe Palancier. I'm part of the adoption discussion and support group here at Faith. Folks from our group are going to talk today about our journeys to becoming foster and adoptive parents. But first, my wife Wendy and I are going to share a couple of thoughts about God's call to all of us to be part of the redemptive work that he does through adoption. And Margot Kelly put together these nifty summaries of who's talking and a little bit about how we got involved. So you can follow along with that. Certainly God has adopted all of us. We are sinful and broken people that he's welcomed into his family. And so when we adopt a child into our own families, we imitate the work that God has already done for us. But God calls us all more specifically to care for children without families. James 1:27 says, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." Some Christians see this as a mandate to become involved with adoption and foster care. I think it's more of an illustration of what true religion looks like rather than a specific mandate. But either way, clearly orphans, that is, children who are without a family, to care for them and to demonstrate God's love to them, are important to the Lord. So how have people in this church responded to that call? Some of us have welcomed foster children into our home, and each of the people who are speaking will have a picture of their family. This is our family, and you can see our three kids there, Claire, Erica, and Aaron. We welcomed the three of them into our home 3 years ago as foster children, and then we were able to adopt them after they had been with us for a year. Last year, there were about 9,000 foster children in Washington State, and of those who left the foster system last year, about 1,700 were adopted, and about 3,500 returned to their biological parents. Other people in this church have adopted a child as an infant who needed a family. Jenny will talk about their family's experience a little later about adopting a child from an orphanage overseas. Wendy, you want to add a few more thoughts?
Thank you. I'm Wendy. In many cases, the children who need to be adopted have had very difficult experiences, and they're truly in distress. Receiving them into your home is messy, and very often their distress becomes your distress. Common parenting techniques fail. Sometimes your family looks like a failure because it's full of conflict, can be full of stress, it can be full of uncomfortable situations. So it doesn't always look clean and tidy. But that doesn't lessen the value of caring for these children who need homes. We care for children without families because it makes it all the more clear that God has received us, broken children who are full of sin, who taint our every relationship with sin, and he's welcomed us fully into his family. And caring for such children on earth can be lonely and difficult, and families who choose to welcome kids in this way need help and support from their church family. So the other people in our group will also be speaking. We have Dave and Jenny Sullivan, who will be, and also Andrew and Sandy, who are going to be talking about their experiences with foster kids and with adoption. And then Margot will wrap up with talking about how we as the church can support families who care for these children.
Good morning. We're Dave and Beth Knopp, and we're going to pass the microphone back and forth here and share a few thoughts with you about our journey that began several years ago, where we felt called to foster care, and eventually we ended up adopting a 3-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter at the time. And that journey really continues today, some 6 years later. At different points during our marriage, we had talked about possibly doing foster care, and there were some reasons for that off and on. But it wasn't until about 6 years ago, when our youngest birth child at the time was about 10 years old, and we have four birth children who are now, the youngest is 19 years old. My wife corrected me, 18. So it wasn't until about 6 years ago that actually our children started to kind of encourage us again once again to think about foster care. And shortly thereafter, we became friends with a family who were a foster care family. And at that point, we began to see them model foster care in action. And Beth and I really felt the calling at that time that we needed to do something, and that's something that we could do to serve the needs of children in our community.
And just to add to that, the family that we got to witness had 5 kids, 4 of which were their birth children. One was a foster adopt that they got as an infant. And to see them with a busy life, like we had teenagers, kids in college, and how their life could fit in some more children. And it was really neat to see them not stop, not hold back, and still be able to give to these children. And so Dave and I started discussing it, and of course all of our kids, because it really is, when you have older children in the house, it's a family discussion, because those children will come into your life and impact you in ways that you never, ever expected. And so you as a family need to discuss that calling. And if you're really called like our family was, everybody was on board, even before David and I really were. And we picked the age 0 to 3. A lot of you who know me know that I have a lot of physical impairments. I have an autoimmune disease and constant migraine. And the one thing that I can do very easily is be a mom, because I can be in the house, I can limit the amount of perfume, light, those kinds of things to keep my migraines down to a point where I can get out of the house or, you know, deal with the children. And David's got to the point in his life and in his career that he can, if I have a headache that goes to the point where I'm throwing up and have to get in bed, he can stop what he's doing if he's in town and step in. And the kids that were older could do that also for me for a couple hours until I could bring things back under control. And so, yeah, that's why we do 0 to 3. Plus, when our kids were older, they were involved in sports. It's very easy to take a little one in a car seat and bring them to a swim meet or a dance competition or anything else that our big kids were doing. And, you know, we could pass them around, and all of our friends wanted to hold the babies or the children and kept them occupied for us. Whereas they get older, it causes a little bit more. They're involved in a few more activities themselves. And so for us, that's where we've really felt called to go.
We've had experience working with a couple different licensing situations. We were initially, 6 years ago, licensed by the state. And then when we moved from where we were living then here to Washington State, to this locality, we had the option to work with a private agency. So we chose that route, and we especially like, in our case, we're licensed by Tacoma Youth for Christ. We especially like working with Youth for Christ in this case, because for one, it adds an extra layer of support there. You have the DSHS social workers and so forth, but you also work then with the Youth for Christ caseworkers. And additionally, in the case of Youth for Christ, not necessarily true for all private agencies, but Youth for Christ, we have that, we know that they are praying along with us for these children.
like I touched on earlier, these children are going to come to you in a state that you never imagined. And we can be thankful that most of us have never experienced. I don't think you can prepare yourself to take a child at, who's a 2.5-year-old little girl, for a rape exam. I had to do that with one of our foster kids. You have to be prepared as a family that, as when we brought Naomi, who we ended up adopting, here for one of the first times, she started screaming in the middle of church. And we had to take her out, and I could hear her going down the stairs with Dave all the way out, all the way to the parking lot. I could still hear her screaming because she wasn't used to coming to church. And she wasn't used to being loved unconditionally to the point that even if she's screaming, we're still going to love you and it's okay. And we understand that this is new and this is different and it's scary. And so, you know, the older kids have to realize they're going to be really embarrassed. If they think that their youngest sibling, who's their birth child, will embarrass them, it's nothing like getting a foster child who has, like the two that we adopted, were kind of in a black hole for most of their life. And so they had no social skills. And so they would walk right up to somebody that they didn't know, put their face right up against their face and say something to them that would be totally inappropriate. And so we've been working, and we're still working. It's an ongoing process. They don't come equipped, like children from your womb, with a safe, loving, knowing that mom and dad are never, ever going to hurt them and they're going to love them no matter what. You have to teach these children that it doesn't matter what you do. We are there for you. We love you. And it takes a lot from your children. I mean, our kids have gotten so many things of theirs that are important and special, irreplaceable, broken by foster kids. Not because the kids are bad. It's that's one way that they feel comfortable expressing themselves sometimes is breaking something. Because they're hurt and so damaged inside that they don't have any other way to show it. But as you love them through that, they get better. I mean, the little girl at 2.5 that I had to take for a rape kit was never going to be normal. The psychologist said she was one of the worst that they'd ever seen. She would never, ever be able to develop that part of her brain that would make the connections between actions and consequences. So if you can imagine, every day was a challenge with her physically hurting me and damaging almost everything in our house. When we went to put our house up for sale, we had to get rid of most of our furniture, had to rip out all the carpeting, had to fill holes in the walls where she dug holes in the walls just because of the stress and strain she was under. But she felt so safe with us that she could act out, and knowing that that was healthy for her mental development, to be in a place where she could act out and be safe. And know it's not her fault. It's what the adults did to her that made her the way she was. And you can't blame that tiny little girl. And the minute you get to see her have a real, genuine smile, makes all the strife and stress worthwhile.
So that kind of brings us to the point of transitioning into the adoption story that we have. So in 2007, we were caring for a brother and a sister, and they had been with us for a couple of years, and it looked like they were going to become legally free, and Beth was really feeling a tug to adopt, and I wasn't. I, you know, was about 45 years old or whatever, and I'm like, you know, our youngest is 11 years old, and I'm not interested in starting over with young children again. I said, you know, I might consider older children, but certainly not somebody young. Well, in that case, we didn't have to necessarily make a decision. The state decided that this brother and sister had an older sister, and they wanted to keep them as assembly group, and we were not interested in adopting a sibling group at that point, so we never had to make that decision. But then fast forward here a couple years, and we're caring for another brother and sister. And the sister becomes legally free. At that time, I think she was four, going on five, something like that. And then the younger boy was two, roughly. And so we started filling this tug, and this time a little bit with me as well. at that point, it was August of that particular year, and we were caring just for the sister, and we both started to feel like maybe we were being called to adopt Naomi. I'll let Beth pick it up from there.
Yeah, the parents bartered their two daughters away. Naomi being the oldest of the sibling group, and there was a younger sister who, and then Josiah, who we ended up adopting too. They signed off the paperwork because they knew they were going to lose custody of those two. Naomi was born meth addicted. She was so bad that she spent 2 months in PICU detoxing. And during that time, her parents only visited her once or twice and didn't even call. So she became legally free because they wanted the little boy. And so the state knew with the history, because Naomi's been in and out of foster care since she was born. And at that point, she was five. They let the parents take Josiah back, who was two. The parents didn't make it 6 weeks, and the dad brought Josiah to a bar, and he was high on meth and drunk. So the bartender called the police. The police came, took Josiah, and he came back to us. And so then we knew we were supposed to adopt both of them. So now we have six kids from 26 to 4.
And that's our experience. And
we don't know if we're done yet. We're not sure if God's going to bring more or not.
All right, and now the international adoption story.
Good morning. Is this a good volume? Okay. Though I am sharing, of course, this is my husband's and I's story together. It began about 7 years ago. We wanted to make sure we were taking practical steps to give back our lives to God for the complete grace He has poured out on us. I figured we weren't going to start a big new ministry or even work for one. I'm not intrepid enough to be a missionary, so I pondered what could be done with what we had. One thing we had was a family amongst a rich, extended Christian family here and a wealth of teaching. From my own life experience, I knew the power of having or not having this gift, and I knew what I would wish for my kids if they were in need. Was I willing to give that to another? Now I can gladly say I would never go back. We decided on an international adoption from Liberia in West Africa. International adoption follows the same initial path as domestic, branching off after the home study to follow U.S. immigration and adoption country requirements. I found grants to help financially, and we settled on adopting a boy newborn through age two. A man charts his course, but the Lord determines his steps. Over the next year, after personal struggle, God gave me peace and eagerness to adopt an older child. Almost immediately, we were told that a boy, seven, named Abednego, had been brought to the orphanage. This was the first picture we received of him. We were to bring him home in about 3 months. God's plan. Abednego's and other children's cases were repeatedly stalled through direct individual corruption and general inept processing in a shattered system. Through these years, we were able to immerse ourselves in learning about Liberia, the pain and violence, the devastation of a people, my son's people. One of the most precious aspects of adoption is that it lets you go beyond ministering and identify in the substructure of yourself with another, to take another as your flesh and blood, and see with new eyes. This wait for Abednego meant that these formative years were lived and learned in a Liberian orphanage. Then, through an amazing providence, we were able to bring him home last May at age 11. The trip to bring him home was difficult for me. Fear of being at the mercy of officials, the firsthand sight of the ruin of others' lives, emotional personal interactions, and leaving the other kids at the orphanage. What a blessing, though, for little me to be able to bless someone else in such a time and place. Abednego, my beloved son. He knew more about American culture than my other children did. He filled them in on Michael Jackson and the Terminator and Mr. Bean. Honestly, without electricity, but with a generator, they watched masses of TV and video at the orphanage. He could tell you every soccer team, its rank, and star players. But he knew almost no basic historical or scientific facts, couldn't write a complete sentence or read a page through. Through this year and 4 months, he has grown so much in every way. Naturally, when he first came, he brought the typical baggage such a life brings: lying, sullenness, looking out for number one. Imagine living such a sad, scattered life and then being confined for years waiting, with your imagination only sparked by video. God was and is at work, though, in my dear boy. He truly believes in Christ, and through 100%, no matter what, parental love, discipline and teaching, normal family life and habits, he has woken up, as it seems to me, to so much life. It's amazing to see, and a worthwhile work to do. My delightful son. He will have many more challenges over the years as he processes more deeply what God has planned for his life. What a treasure he brings to us and to our body here, as those who have suffered always do. What have my other children learned? So much. Waiting, embracing someone else as their own, practically living nitty-gritty patience with someone who was given less, admiring amazing different talents and traits than their own, seeing the sameness of their own sinfulness and their humanity with someone else's, trusting mom and dad, the strong love God has made humans capable of for each other, the delights of living with someone from another race. They all openly declare that they could not imagine life without Abednego, and each has a special relationship with him, as siblings do. If you have ever considered adoption as something for your family to do, give it another look. It's so worth it. A verse I love to think about is from David, telling his son about building the temple. We know that we, his body, are God's temple, being built on the chief cornerstone, so how much more can this scripture apply to any work we do for his kingdom? Then David said to Solomon his son, "Be strong and courageous and do it. Do not be afraid and do not be dismayed, for the Lord God, even my God, is with you. He will not leave you or forsake you until all the work for the service of the house of the Lord is finished." And I think Andrew and Sandy are going to come.
I pleaded with Sandy not to have to be the one to talk, but she insisted, so I accommodated. Actually, she's going to talk about the mechanics of adoption and foster licensing a little bit later. That's us minus Sandy. So that's Jackson and Miranda, you know, are my bio children, but Sandy's stepchildren. That's Peter, as our adoptive son, and that's Julian. This is the first day of school for the three Miltons three weeks ago. And Julian's still going to preschool daycare type stuff. The group sat down a couple weeks ago, or last week, I guess, and talked about trying to encourage people to be thinking about how to support foster and adoptive care, not necessarily to take a child, but how to support a family that might be involved in foster and adoptive care. And I get to be the role of the disclaimer, things that that are not, I mean, we have an uplifting story, and we have also some discouraging bits. And so I was kind of tasked with being the one who gets to say a little bit about some of the difficult parts, which is I had to do because I spent most of my time hearing uplifting stories and thinking, it's going to be great. But we came to find, at least I'm speaking for me, and I think Sandy feels some of this too, but put all this on me, please, and don't ask her to explain what I've said. To get in close with these children can be, as Wendy said, can be sloppy and sometimes frustrating and difficult and discouraging, and sometimes I think, couldn't we just sponsor a child and write the check and get the picture that goes on the refrigerator and just, we'll call it good and say, look at our sweet sponsored child that we've never met and we don't have to really live with and work with. And so, but I noticed that in my life, the Bible seems to call me to do things that I don't normally, wouldn't typically do. I never seem to get exhorted to pursue my self-interest in the Bible. So keep looking for it, looking for the more chocolate cake line. So barring that some apocryphal book shows up sometime, we're doing that. Part of our motivation was that we were going to add to our family through foster adopt. And, of course, I thought, we'll get licensed. 6 weeks later, we'll have this child at home. And, a year later, we'll be having this. It'll be great. A shorter version of Peter. And, going on now a year, almost 10 months with Julian in our house, and he's probably not going to be legally free, which is fine. But, it's not sort of turning out the way we expected. So let me say a couple things about, as I think the outline says, sort of stresses and strains at various levels. Jenny said, seeing the shattered system, I had a conversation with a fellow foster parent once, and I was trying to say, our foster child has some issues that I can't cope with very well right now. And I said, our foster child has some issues. And he said, stop. Your foster child has issues? Really? And I said, yeah, I know. Every foster child's in the system for bad reasons. So... And the human response, even in the United States, so we're going to create these organizations, they're going to respond to this. The human response to that is also sloppy and somewhat shattered. So, going from the bottom, I'll talk about, we've had strains with the state and our agency, because it's hard to, get six or seven adults to talk about how to do something in an organized way and have everybody agree. And then everybody do what we all thought we agreed on. So, I've ended up sometimes feeling like we're a family, it's just alone. A state worker that doesn't communicate, or a foster care agency worker that makes a mistake. And then and these happen. There's lots of changing requirements. There's lots of rules that are getting shifted all the time. And there is a kind of a culture. At agencies, they are bureaucracies. There's a kind of bureaucratic culture that has to work with the state, has to meet state requirements, and the state requirements are often rather feel sort of checklisty. In the case of our Julian's bio dad, whom we both like quite a bit, and see a real earnestness in him and a real eagerness to learn and to get his children back. There are competing requirements that seem like, wait a minute, you want to do this. And you want to do that, but if he does this, he can't do that, and you're mad he's not doing that. How does he make sense of that? And these are not people who know how to navigate the system very well. So there's been for us some frustrations with thinking, this guy wants to do the right thing, and in some ways this whole system is putting barriers in front of him. So sometimes it's hard, like with adults who have other expectations and other hopes for how things go, to be managing someone else's life from afar, and yet we're the ones who really run the day-to-day aspects of his upbringing. So sometimes there's a great disconnect among all those players. I have felt disconnected anyway. I won't speak for anybody else. But given the nature of organizational bureaucratic life, it seems hard to believe that wouldn't happen sometimes. So if you enter into this world, be prepared for knowing that some of those frustrations you might experience in your own life and your own work are going to be present here, can possibly be present here as well. Disruptions for the family, for the family, for the child, or you might have on my notes, problems with the child. You know, as Wendy mentioned, you know, I would say now I've learned I would better come at this with lower expectations, you know, not to be a junior version of the three children that I know and have raised and have learned to live up to my expectations, usually fairly comfortably. These are not children who have had those parameters and those boundaries. And so I have, as I think I mentioned, if you remember last time we talked up on one evening service, I've come face-to-face, first of all, with my own sin, some anger that I let grow too readily. And this is not good for me or the child or our family. So there's been things I've having to confront about that. And I trust that this is for good. This is being rooted out of me for good purpose. You could pray that it's not for it's not for horrible consequence for Julian. But so I've faced my own limitations a little bit by having to face his limitations and not be wrong-minded about those, not be ungenerous about that. And then for our family, I can't speak for other families, but for our family, there are things that will arise that wouldn't have arisen, as I think some of you have already said, about behaviors and attitudes and demeanors that begin to transfer, rub off. Peter and Julian are 8 weeks apart, and you know they spend a lot of time together, and they have quite good times and they have quite bad times. So that at age four, though, those disruptions are probably less potentially problematic than, say, if you're talking about a 9, 10, 11, 12, or teenager in your house. But certainly I've seen some of the demeanors and behaviors that in Julian that are difficult that we tried to work on all of a sudden popping up with Peter. And so that just tempts me to be angry even more. So think of me often, please, of us often, when you pray about this. So all that to say, there are things I would encourage anybody who's interested in this to ask around other people and go with your eyes wide open, because I'm not saying I don't want to do this or it's not been important to do, or that I would change what we've done or want to withdraw from it. But I did have an awakening period, an eye-opening period that I needed to be a little bit more. I would have been better off to be a bit more thoughtful about. So I'll tell you more if you need to know privately. And I didn't know, are you summarizing now, or should Sandy do her mechanics of licensing stuff now? You are.
Don't stand there, it's hot. Wow. I think they did such a great job. We foster and, can you hear me? We have done kinship and we have done, my husband's right there looking at me. And we've been with this group, this foster Sunday school group for a couple months now, 3, 4 months, 5 months. And I learned more today than that I didn't even know, and it just melts my heart, you know, hearing about these children and hearing where they've come from and where they're going. And it's just fantastic that the Holy Spirit puts on women's hearts, men's hearts, children's hearts to bring in someone who is visibly broken. And I just appreciate each and every one of them sharing. And we've heard one another's stories often. And yet it still just cuts to your heart. And I just want to thank each and every couple for being willing to do this. So I want to give them a round of applause. You don't have to stand and bow, though. You know, I was thinking about, summarize this, wow. Well, my little part here is that I wanted to talk about, as a church family, what can we say to Andrew? What can we say to Sandy or to Beth or to Jennifer or to Andy or to other people in our church that are have foster kids or who are interested in adoption? How can we, as brothers and sisters in Christ, young or old, what can we say to them as they're in the trenches? And I thought, well, what do we say to other missionaries? You know, we get emails from missionaries, and we find out, hey, this is what's going on in Liberia, or this is what's going on in India. This is what's going on at the White Swan Reservation over in Yakima. And what do we do for the missionaries that we hear of, that we even our sons and daughters send off to other countries or to Eastern Washington? So this is a participation aspect right now. What do?
We send them care packages, encouraging them.
We send them care packages, like food, coffee, Bible verses, money. That's great. And encouraging notes. What else do we do for our missionaries?
Pray.
We pray for them. Thank you. We do pray for them. Well, there are missionaries that we send off, and there are missionaries that we bring into our home. There are exchange students. I look at Principal Hanula, and there are a lot of people here who bring exchange students into their home. And this is what we do as foster parents. We bring strangers into our home, and we hope to have an impact on them in their lives. And so I brought a little email with me that my husband got, and I wanted to just read it really quickly and then ask for your example, ask for responses and what you would say to them. What you would say to a brother or sister that you're fellowshipping with in church. What to say, what not to say. So let me read this real quick, and then we'll bring Sandy up after I get your response. Dear Sean, I wanted to send you an email to update you on a little one in our care. This morning as I was making lunches and breakfast, a little one wrapped in the blanket she was given the day she was taken from her mom came in and started chatting. She caused me to pause when I heard her say, I looked at the picture my mom drew and it made me so sad. Then she started crying. I turned off the water that I had on boil for oatmeal and put her on my lap. She continued, I am just so sad that no one in my family could take care of me. Now she's sobbing. No one, not my mom or my dad. No one could take care of me, but I had to go live with another family, and now you're taking care of me. I miss her so much. We're both weeping by now, rocking back and forth and saying, it is so sad. It is so sad. It is so sad in the sinful world. Let's pray to our Lord Jesus for his comfort, for you and for your mom and dad, and for our sinful world. Now, late with breakfast, lunches, and other children waiting to get ready for the day, how can this be shaken off? How can I take her to school and just leave her there for the day? How can this day go on normally? How can I go to a mom's group? Please help me to rely on the Lord for strength with your words of healing, encouragement, your healing balm of prayer, and your kind listening ears as I share my burden with you. Please remind me that God has given us what this little one needs. God knows that my own children's needs will be met, and none will be lacking. Thank you, Sean, for being part of our morning. Now, I shared this with my husband, and he was going to get on the phone and make a phone call right after this happened. And I said, this was so hard. This was so hard with Kayleen. And this was Kayleen. And so I said, honey, I need you. Please come and give me a hug. And that's my husband. We're in this together. And so I think, you know, when we share our struggles like that, or what are some things that you would say? Does that make sense? So if someone comes to you and says, man, this happened, I just don't feel like I have the strength to go on. If you're talking to someone in fellowship, what do you say?
You know, it comes to me that the Lord gives us many examples of things that are great, sometimes though through omission. And in this case, the first thing I thought of was how important love is and Christ's love is to us. And when it's not there, how much it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And where we really want to align ourselves and with the Lord. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and aspects around that is kind of where I was thinking. It doesn't give you comfort necessarily, but it frames it that, you know, because sometimes these kids are wanting a little attention and love and right there, but they also want to know the bigger picture. Why is this? You know, and I think when you can bring this from a biblical perspective at the same time,
okay, so
balance and say, this is why we want to follow Christ and why we want to please Him, because He loves us and we love Him, and, you know, can bring it right to that perspective.
It is so sad,
perhaps,
that there's sin in the world and that we're in this situation, but this too will pass. And I think that's great that there is a balm that we can give to one another in tough situations like this. The same as what we do for missionaries. I'll pray for you. Let me pray for you. Bonnie Payne, I came in here this morning, and she came up to me and said, I'm praying for Kayleen every day. And I was blown away. I mean, she's not involved in our daily life. She's not involved in our lives, you know, at all. We see her on church. We see her at church. She said, I know what can happen, and I want Kayleen to know the Lord Christ. I'm praying for her every day so that she won't fall into the trap of the past. And I just think that's such a great example. I wanted to give a real practical, is that usually when kids come into foster care, they don't know about relationships, and it's really important. It's so great for women to be involved, to say, who's this little one? Who's this little one? I think it's also great for men to know that, okay, these kids come from, you know, troubled past. It may be better for me not to tease or not to be involved. So that's a real practical. That's what I've noticed with kids. I don't know if any other moms can mention that or say that. But anyways, I just wanted to share that, to think about what we can say to one another in the trenches, and to encourage one another daily. Yes?
I just wanted to share. I've been thinking this whole time. I have one of my very best friends, 40, almost 40. She was fostered in 5 foster homes at age 2. Sexually abused, adopted at age 2. And I just keep thinking of her, and I keep thinking about her family, how she knows the Lord, how it is not too easy. She's still counseling, weekly counseling, she's 40. But we talk, and she has so much in her life that she can share with others. And I just want to encourage all of you who are fostering adopting, that you are, it is eternal. It's an eternal consequence. And it wasn't perfect. She was the one who was screaming in church, and she didn't like the rooms that we grew up with her. And, you know, it's not easy, but the Lord has such a great, greater plan. And now my friend Teresa can minister to people because of what happened to her, even though it's from her.
Right. That's right. Thank you.
I just want to touch on a lot of you saw a little baby that we had for a year. One of the hardest parts of doing foster is the grief of losing them. And she had to go back to a family that we didn't see any change, but the parents checked off the boxes that the state had for them, even though this child had a major emotional fallout when they had to go do unsupervised visits and to the point of losing 5 pounds in a month when she was reunited. And, you know, going back to all of her post-traumatic stress symptoms as they were doing the reuniting process. And you have to love these kids like you love your own children. And so it's a death to you, almost. I mean, they're always, you and I have had tons of kids in our home. We've only talked about a couple of them, but those children are on our prayer list. So keeping the families who do have a child leave and supporting them through that, it really is a loss. It is a death. All of our kids are grieving. Naomi and Josiah are grieving the loss of this little one, and knowing that she went back to a situation. Sometimes the situations are great, and they're going to a new adoptive home, or the parents really turned around, but this was not that situation. And she was in physical harm. And going back to that is, you know, you have to have the ultimate trust in God, is to let this little one that you brought so far and give them back to God and put her in God's hands and back into that family. So that's just one of the emotional things that I forgot to touch on.
Thank you.
Sandy's going to give some specifics as far as if there's any interest in foster or adoption.
Actually, I'm going to do a little something different than what I promised to do. Because, would you pass this out?
Oh, sure.
So Margo has these sheets that I wrote up about some of the kind of the process by which one might go through the adoption or the licensing process or adoption. But I wanted to shift a little bit on the cuff, because one of the things about the whole notion of the church being involved is a little bit, I think it got touched on in different ways, but there's some really specific things that the church can do as well that I think is really helpful to be thinking about. So we had gone to a banquet dinner for Youth for Christ where they brought in, I forget his name always,
Robert Gelinas,
and his church in Colorado, he is a pastor, and he said there is X number of kids in foster care in Denver, and our church is going to take 10% of those kids. So he made this bold promise for his church. And so he spoke really very convictingly about what a church can do to be really supportive of those families that took in the kids. And so he talked about really practical things like being able to help somebody work on their house so that it could so that the rooms could be up to standard for the license, or people willing to drive to different appointments, or people willing to have the kids in their homes to give the parents a little bit of a break. So some really practical things that I think are also really important things to be thinking about when we think about our church becoming more, what's the right word, attuned to the whole field of the foster care or foster adopt. So I just wanted to say that really briefly, and I know we're almost out of time. So one of the things that I do have on this sheet is respite care, and then foster care, foster adopt, or adoption. It's in very bullet form, but you can look through that, and I certainly can. I'm happy to talk to you about those steps that would be involved. The respite care does involve being licensed, just like you would have to be licensed if you're going to have someone live in your home. But I think then, in terms of the licensing, you would want to think about really how much involvement do you want to have for with agencies, and because it can feel somewhat intrusive, and also thinking kind of long term. So we think now about, you know, if you think about adoption, but I think about some of the legal ramifications of that, and then you are legally responsible for that child. And I think about, is this somebody that I think, okay, I can put them in my will and have them equal, because that's what my child, I want my child to feel like everything is equal. And so those are other factors to think about that I really do, I call me crazy, but I think about those things. And so thinking about all those different things, it can be really enriching. And so I think it doesn't have to mean that you're going to have the child in your home, but you can be supportive of others who have the kids in their homes, and then just through a whole range of different avenues for that. So that's what I'll stop with, and I think we're out of time, unless there's any pressing question.
I do have a question. I've adopted, you know, Tim and I have adopted our kids, and at the time we adopted, there was an adoption tax credit that really helped offset things financially. I haven't been keeping up to date on that. I've heard that it's going away. What is the status of that?
I don't know the status.
Does anybody know?
Phasing it right now. They are considering, I think, phasing it out as of January unless the lawmakers step up, because that really does help, especially, you know, we have three kids in college. We knew we were going to have a fourth child in college. We felt really called to adopt these kids. They were part of our family. But we're also paying out-of-state tuition for all these kids in school and, you know, in grad school and whatnot. That really made, it was kind of like odd. We didn't know about that tax credit at all, but it really was a blessing. It really helped cover the cost of the lawyers and all the other stuff that you have, which you're not going to get in different types of adoption, but if you adopt in foster care, you do get that.
I know that when we adopted, it totally took care of the cost of one of the adoptions and almost all of the other.
So all of ours.
Yeah.
I think it's been
going down.
Yeah.
And I think there is some concern it's going to go away this year.
Yeah.
There's actually a movement afoot to write to your Congress and all that kind of thing.
It had been up to 13,000, was what the credit was. So, yes, Wendy.
Can I just mention, one thing that we would have found helpful with having a church is having a little bit more of a familiarity with some of the specific attachment needs of children who come from difficult backgrounds. So, for example, we were at a church where we had asked the Sunday school teachers to not have our children on their laps or be really touchy with them, because we felt that it was really important for them to be establishing an exclusive relationship with us, our parents. And the Sunday school director was very standoffish about this. And she said, wow, you know, she gave me parenting advice. She just did not understand why I would request this, to the point where I felt it was not helpful for our kids to be in Sunday school because of this potential contact. And I didn't have any problem with the teachers. This was an issue. And this area was just so foreign to our church that it was painful. There was just no understanding or sympathy. And this was a real need for our kids. So having an atmosphere of familiarity and sensitivity to specific attachments to these kids is,
and it helps to
really
be the foster or adoptive family of the authority on that child, because they're with them 24 hours a day. I mean, we had to have a rule with Naomi and had to tell her teachers and everybody in the school that she could only hug them on Friday because she had no personal boundaries. So she would hug absolutely every person she ran into, regardless of whether or not she knew this person or not. She's much better now, but Friday was a hug day. You know, she knew that. And it helps if people we were very blessed. We had a teacher in kindergarten that had a sister that adopted from foster care, so she understood. So she would help us in that. But, you know, we're the ones that are living this 24/7, and we're the ones that kind of know what's best, and it doesn't always cover the way you parent your other child. So you just kind of have to defer, and that would really help.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all.